Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to this Monday's mentoring session. In our recording studio today, we are joined by Jennifer Gilk of Gilk Legacy Law in Redwood Falls, Minnesota. So thanks for driving up here. You're in the Twin Cities for not only this mentoring session, but also some real estate work.
I'm on the Minnesota State Bar Association's Real Property Council, and we had an event last night and meeting this morning.
Great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. So you've just completed the self-awareness mentoring journals, and our listeners have been along on this journey. But if you're a first-time listener, the self-awareness mentoring journal is an opportunity for each person that I work with to be able to check in with themselves and connect with what they're feeling and to give them an opportunity to kind of feel their feet, kind of center themselves and get into the present moment so that we can have an authentic conversation and we can explore what's happening. So, how are you feeling?
Well, this is an interesting experience for me. So, I described how I'm feeling right now as curious, mentally fluid and clear. I generally always feel powerful, which doesn't mean I don't feel fear, but I generally choose to focus on feeling powerful. I always trust a higher power. I am generally very observant. I tend to be quiet and watch and listen and observe, and I am always realistic, sometimes too much so.
Okay.
And lately with the business, we'll get into this, but the inner challenge and growth for me has been we're a bit overwhelmed right now and exhausted, but we need to keep focusing on being courageous and keep pushing ahead. So action-oriented is pretty important, and that's all I've got down.
So that's how you're feeling right now?
Yeah.
Great. Yes. So you've been in a big transition over the last 6 months, bigger than normal. Before we talk about that, why don't we explore a little bit about where you grew up, a little bit more about your family background. I know you're a Minnesota native like myself.
Correct. I grew up on a small 300-acre dairy farm in southwest Minnesota, just outside of Tyler, Minnesota. That is on the Buffalo Ridge. They are about 7 miles, 15 miles from the South Dakota border. Right.
Pretty far southwest.
Mm-hmm. Most people in the metropolitan areas would say they don't even know where it is. That taught me a lot about work ethic. I like to say I still have the calluses to prove I grew up on a dairy farm because I do. They never went away. We were taught to work pretty hard.
And what kinds of work did you do on the farm?
Everything. If anybody is familiar with a typical dairy farm, they, even among farmers, all I have to do is say I grew up on a dairy farm, and immediately they understand the work involved in that. It's working with the animals. It's slinging hay bales and straw bales. It's mucking out the stalls. It's picking rock. It's walking bean fields. It's
driving tractor.
It's carrying, you know, 5-gallon buckets full of whatever. It's taking care of the animals. It's just flat out a lot of physical labor and hard work.
Excellent. And it sounds like that really formed your work ethic.
I couldn't say it at the time when I was growing up because, you know, we did work harder than, frankly, my friends who lived in town or wherever. So I was rather resentful of how hard we had to work growing up. In addition, we heated the house with wood, so even on the week, you know, there was always...
Yeah, we did too.
There was always chopping wood. There was always stuff to do. But once I got to college, it took me 1 week at college at the University of Minnesota Morris, and I looked around and thought, holy cow, there's a lot of yahoos out in the world who do not know how to work, and they don't know how to take care of themselves, and they really don't have any interest in being self-responsible. And I began to understand what a gift my parents had given me by teaching me how to work and work hard and have high expectations of myself and have high standards and to be responsible, because on the farm, they needed our labor. For our family's livelihood, they needed our labor. We had to get things right. It mattered if the animals lived or died. So it mattered if jobs were done
properly,
correctly and well. And boy, was that a gift.
Mm-hmm. In the whole circle of life, understanding.
Yeah.
You know, that we're here for a certain period of time. Animals live out a certain life. They die. There's births. Yeah. So how big of a family did you grow up in?
There were four kids, mom, dad, four kids, three girls and a boy. My older sister is 7 years older than I am. And then we younger three are 18 months apart. So I actually tend to have firstborn birth order characteristics.
So there were a total of five in your family?
Four kids total, and then mom and dad, so six total.
Okay, I see. So you've got two younger siblings and one older.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so your parents were dairy farmers. Was your mom involved with doing chores, or was she involved in handling all the food and keeping the house clean?
Yeah, all hands were on deck. Thankfully, she was willing to go out and do the chores in the morning before school that the girls usually did, so that we didn't have to go out, do the chores, come in, get all cleaned up, get ready for school, and be ready to get on the bus at 7:15. Okay,
yeah.
That's a pretty heavy schedule. Thankfully, she would do that for us. And then in the evenings, the kids did all the chores, and she did not do chores. But, you know, every week, Saturdays, we cleaned the house top to bottom. Upstairs, main level, basement. She froze, had a big garden, froze vegetables. We butchered chickens every year. We had, I don't know how many it was, I just know it was a lot of chickens.
Okay.
And we raised the chickens, and then we would butcher the chickens. And so everything was work.
We've had conversations, too, about a book that my husband Matthew's reading, going through yoga teacher training, about our world will never be a peaceful world until we look at how we treat animals and treat them differently. And you and I have talked a little bit about our upbringings with feeding hundreds of people with milk and all the products that we were growing on the farm and feeding all the animals. And so what are your thoughts when you think about that?
Well,
concept.
Humans are omnivores, first of all. We have teeth made for grinding grain, vegetables, and we have canine teeth made for ripping meat. So we are born meat eaters. We are born omnivores. I can tell you that from my experience growing up on the farm, and of course today we do have some differences with the mega agriculture feedlots. That's a different paradigm. But the paradigm I grew up with, we had to treat the animals well. Mistreated animals do not produce very well and produce very much. And we had to treat the animals well, and we had to take care of them because our livelihood depended on them, whether we had enough money to do what we needed to do to live, buy clothes, etc. depended on how well we stewarded the land and how well we treated the animals and how well everything was integrated.
Yeah, that's a good perspective. What were your interests as a child? So outside of doing chores, what were some of the things you enjoyed doing?
I was the classic bookworm, constantly reading any time that I could sneak off and go unnoticed, because if you were noticed, you were drafted into the workforce to get something done. Anytime I could sneak off and just read, that's often what I would do. With the three of us who were younger siblings, we played outside a lot, very much make-believe. There were no video games. And, you know, we had effectively 80 acres to play on. And when we got old enough, and back then old enough probably meant 9 or 10 years old, we went up the road a quarter of a mile away to, we called it the pasture, but it was actually an old abandoned grove, building site grove, and we would explore. So it was the best of all possible worlds. Lots and lots and lots of make-believe. We would build forts with the bales up in the haymow of the dairy barn. Everything was make-believe and imagination and swimming. We were all big swimmers. In high school, we did a lot of water skiing and that kind of thing. There were no tubes back then. It was all water skiing. There were no knee boards. No, people didn't tube behind the boat like they do now. Those things didn't exist. But we water skied. We did have snowmobiles, so that was a lot of fun. And we also had a horse that we used to ride a lot. But lots of time spent outdoors, lots of time spent playing and imagining and reading.
And how did the working with your siblings, do you think, helped or hindered your relationship that you have with them today?
Oh, I think anytime you have to go through being forced to work together, and in that day and age on farms, kids were given a tremendous amount of responsibility.
So are you saying like in the 70s?
Yeah, the 70s. I was born in 67, so this would be in the 70s and the early 80s. Kids were given a lot of responsibility. We were driving tractor by the time we were 8. Now that might make a lot of people shudder, but frankly, way too many parents these days are way too overprotective. You can't expect a child to learn to think for themselves if you don't let them think for themselves. And the way you let them think for themselves is to give them the freedom to make mistakes. But we were given an awful lot of responsibility. And so there is something about when you are forced to get along and work together and accomplish tasks that, frankly, you're going to get in a lot of trouble for if they aren't done well and right and timely. There is a shared appreciation probably for each other that maybe not everybody has.
Yeah. Very good. What are your fondest memories of your childhood and your youth?
I would say probably those endless summer days that hopefully a lot of people remember from childhood, where time seems to be suspended and you play outside all day and suddenly you look up and for us it was chore time.
right. Yeah.
But you look up and you don't know where the day has gone and time has been suspended.
What experiences influenced your early adult years the most, do you think, in becoming an attorney?
I was a little unusual in that law interested me for a long time before I got to be a teenager. I just thought it sounded interesting. It sounded intellectually stimulating. I liked to learn. I thought it would always be something I would have to continually learn. But I never take anything for granted. And so although I talked about going to law school, I did not assume that I would be able to go to law school. I knew that that would be a long-term goal. And of course, all long-term goals are made up of short-term goals. And so I didn't think about going to law school. I just focused on, all right, first I have to do the best I can in high school. And then when I got to college, okay, I have to do the best I can at college. And so I just focused on what was the immediate building block in front of me and doing the best I could to accomplish what I thought would be useful in helping me with that longer-term goal.
Did you get some help in paying for your college?
No.
So how did you foot the bill?
Well, I graduated from high school in 85, and anyone who's familiar with agriculture knows that that was the height of the farm crisis. So my parents could not help me at all. In fact, even as a senior in high school, I filled out the FAFSA on my own, the financial aid app student application. And my parents felt very bad that they couldn't help me with college. And I said, look, the best thing you can do is give me your income tax returns, because that's what I need to fill out the FAFSA. And at the height of the farm crisis, we were lucky to have food on the table. So in undergrad, primarily about half of it was grants and scholarships, because I was a straight-A student. There were only two or three quarters in college that I did not get a 4.0. I figured I had one shot at this, and by golly, I wasn't going to screw it up, frankly. And then the other half was loans. And I always did work study in college. I was a lifeguard. I taught PE, swimming lessons for the college PE courses. And I was also a writing tutor for 3 years for college students.
Oh, that's a huge commitment, just that.
Yeah. And then in law school, I was able to stay in the top third always of my law school class. I graduated top 25%, but I had a scholarship for roughly a third or so of my cost. I had loans, and then my second and third year, I was a legal research and writing TA. All of the first years have to take legal research and writing year-long as coursework.
Sure.
So I was a TA for two of those years, and then my third year, I also, in addition to being legal research and writing TA and having my own course load, I also worked part-time for the law firm that I had clerked for in Des Moines the previous summer.
So you stayed through your law degree at the University of Morris?
No, University of Morris is an undergrad. They are part of the University of Minnesota system. For law school, I went to Drake Law School in Des Moines at Drake University.
Okay, so you transferred after your fourth year to Drake.
And when did you, it sounds like your leadership skills kind of started emerging when you took charge of the paperwork for getting into school and filling out the farm crisis, helping your parents with the paperwork. And
well, I would say, actually, and don't laugh, my leadership skills started in seventh grade when I was a cheerleader. That forced me to be out in front of people and to kind of put myself out there. Otherwise, I tended to be rather shy. But actually, all through high school, I was in student government. I was heavily into band and the music programs and into performance. And I tended to just step forward because, frankly, having grown up on the farm and having to work so much, you figure out very quickly ways to do things and do things efficiently because you don't want to work any harder than you have to.
Yeah, right.
And I become very impatient with indecision and ineptitude and what I perceive to be stupidity and foolishness.
in life or in
general? In general. So okay. I tend to rather, I would rather step forward and
I see, take on the leadership.
And take on the leadership.
Because you know what you're doing and you're confident in your skills and you know that you, and you want to get the job done.
Get the job done.
Okay. So were those the same skills that led you to start your own private practice this last year?
I would suppose they played a pretty big part.
All right. So when did you know that you wanted to focus on real estate? Now, I noticed in your website you had mentioned that you've been practicing law for about 22 years in your prior firm. There were how many partners in that firm?
There were four partners, okay. Of which I was one.
Okay. In your bio, you said that when it was time to go to college, I pursued an education to follow my dream of staying in agriculture and protecting our way of life. So you knew at a young age that farms needed to be protected?
Sure. And plus, to be honest, I really didn't have any interest in living in the big city. I knew I wanted to go outstate, back outstate. And I thought, with the perspective of time, I realized I actually had a pretty good childhood and upbringing. And that's where I wanted to go back to and serve those people.
Sure. So when you graduated from college at
Morris.
Then you went on to law school. And once you graduated, did you come back to live in Minnesota?
My first year out of law school, I clerked for the Chief Justice of the Iowa Supreme Court. And at that time, that was Chief Justice McGivern, and he was based out of Ottumwa, Iowa. And when it was time to start looking for my first, you know, you might say real legal job as a lawyer, I specifically targeted outstate Minnesota. I didn't even apply in any of the metro areas. I didn't even want to apply to any of our regional center hubs. I wanted to be in a small county seat town. So I only sent resumes to those small towns, and I followed up with calls to the firms I had sent resumes to.
Wow. All right, so we've had a chance to kind of get your life experience up until Drake University and a little bit afterward. We would love to have you back.
Okay.
So for our listeners over the next week, I would like you to just explore your background and start writing parts of your own personal story with some of the questions that I've been talking with Jennifer about. So how you grew up, so that you can start preparing yourself, that you can start getting comfortable with talking about your background and some of the things that you learned during your childhood. All right, so thanks for being here. Thanks, Jennifer. Thank you, our audience. Thank Mike Cabea for his technical engineering expertise. We will see you next Monday.